This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraja aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A big welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM 206. You can also join us online and listen live or to previous shows via our website, horseracingradio.net. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm flying solo again today. I'm hanging out here in our Lexington, Kentucky studio with our wonderful producer, Lee Delapina. And Lee, I have to say, I am very excited about tonight's guest, a very good friend of mine. We attended the North American Racing Academy together back in the day. It seems like 100 years ago. But this rider went on to accomplish a lot during his relatively short career. He was the first graduate of Chris McCarron's jockey school to reach 500 wins. He also achieved 2 riding titles at Turfway Park, the first of which during his first year was riding as an apprentice, which is quite an accomplishment. With 549 wins, over $7 million in earnings, I would like to welcome to the show our guest tonight, Ben Creed. Ben, thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And it's been a little while since we talked, Ben. You are now down in Georgia, yes?
That's correct.
How's the weather down there?
It's hot. The last 2 weeks, it's been over 100 degrees.
Wow. I thought it was hot up here in Kentucky.
Yeah, not yet. It's not.
Well, Ben, so you are actually a Kentucky native. You grew up in Taylorsville, Kentucky. And tell us about your years growing up in Taylorsville. What kind of a kid were you?
I was kind of a, I guess you'd say I was a loner. I didn't exactly grow up in a neighborhood. All I had was 150 acres of woods and pasture and creeks to entertain my long summer days, me and my brothers and sisters, helping on the farm and just splashing in the creek and catching frogs and all that fun stuff.
Sounds like a good way to grow up in Kentucky.
It was very much.
we always called Ben during our school years. Ben had the nickname Cowboy, and I guess after hearing that, you can kind of understand why he was multi-talented and all those kinds of things. You know, Kentucky people do, I guess. But Ben, you are unlike most of the others we have had on the show in that you did not dream of becoming a jockey your entire life. In fact, you were working for UPS and suddenly became interested in becoming a jockey. And so tell us, how did you get involved?
You want the long story or the short story?
Hey, we got an hour. Go for it.
The short story is relatively short. It looked like fun. You know, growing up in Kentucky, it's kind of odd. I knew absolutely nothing about horse racing whatsoever. It's somewhat of a unique story how I got into it. Like you said, I was working at UPS at the hub at the airport. The reason that I started working there was because I really wanted to go back to school, back to college for something. I didn't know what I wanted to go for or anything like that. They have a program, it's called Earn and Learn, where UPS will pay up to 100% of your tuition. So I started working there. I ended up working there for 2 years, before I ever even did anything to go back to college. I didn't take any of the steps, not until I was in well within my third year working there. And again, I didn't know what I wanted to go to school for. Like, nothing really jumped out at me. I was just, you know, kind of floating like many young people do out of high school. So a friend of mine that worked there, he wasn't involved in horse racing, but he was a really big horse racing fan. And he kept telling me, you know, inviting me to go to Churchill Downs, and I just kept saying, I really didn't want to. And finally one day he said, man, you would be like the perfect size for a jockey. Like, you're smaller than a lot of them. Just seeing them walking around, you know, when they get off their horses, like, you should really go over there and just think about maybe how to get into that. So that sparked a little bit of an interest. You know, I started watching some races a little bit and thinking, wow, that does kind of look like fun. So I got on Google and, you know, I wanted to go to school for something and get some type of education. So the North American Racing Academy popped up. I mean, I read a lot of other articles about how, you know, people are just kind of born into it. Their family's been doing it for years and, you know, this, that, and the other. And I didn't have any connections whatsoever to anybody on the backside. So it's not like I could just walk up to somebody and, you know, tell them, even if I was able to, you know, catch a trainer or somebody at the racetrack. I know nothing. I have zero experience even around horses in general. So the North American Racing Academy popped up, and I thought, you know, that could be my doorway right there. So I did the application, and I was accepted, and I went, and I ended up falling in love with it for the next 5.5 years.
That's fantastic, Ben. I'm curious, what did your family say when you told them you would be going to jockey school?
Honestly, they supported me because it was school. It was some type of education, and they were pushing me to do that. They kept pushing me to, you know, go to school, go do something, you know, really should do this. So what really got them on board with it more than anything was the fact that, hey, if nothing else, he can get a degree here. Even if the racing part doesn't work out, he'll have some type of degree. So, you know, and they were very supportive the whole time. You know, they kept up with me and, you know, made sure I was doing everything that I needed to do. And, you know, I have the best parents I could ever ask for in the world. But they honestly, I don't think in the beginning that they thought that I would be able to accomplish what I accomplished. I think I took everybody by surprise.
That's
just given my background. I mean, when I read on the North American Racing Academy's website that it was founded and run by Chris McCarron, my first thing was, well, who's Chris McCarron? I got to Google this guy, find out who he is. I didn't know who he was.
Wow.
That's how little I knew about horse racing.
You went from 0 to 60, and that's the beauty of the school. And as I said in the intro, I also attended the same year as Ben. The beauty of that is that, unlike just going to the racetrack and starting to get on horses, you earn a degree through the program, which is excellent, given that a jockey's career is not always very lengthy. So,
right, exactly.
So the degree part of things was very attractive. And so without the North American Racing Academy, Ben, without Chris McCarron, who we've interviewed here on Jock Talk in the past, you could have never pursued your career as a jockey. So tell us in detail, take us back to day one when you walked into that barn for the first time and school was in session.
Well, like I said, I didn't know a lot about horses. I didn't know anything about thoroughbreds. I've never been up close to a thoroughbred. I mean, I've ridden a little bit here and there, but not enough to really know how to ride. Like, I was just sitting on the horse, and if the horse wouldn't go, I was like, well, this is stupid, and I'd get off. My first thought, when I walked into the barn, walked up to the stall, I looked at that horse, and I went, holy cow, he's huge. I was very intimidated by just the sheer size of these animals. It's just incredible.
Of course. It's definitely different than the ponies on the farm, of course. Of course.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely it was.
Now, how was it learning from the Chris McCarron?
Well, I told Chris, one of the first things I told him, you know, when we went through the interview, you know, to get accepted into the school was I told him, and I tell everybody, I'm not a fast learner. I don't pick up on things, you know, I can't just do it once and then just have it down pat. I have a tendency to overcomplicate things at times, but once I figure it out and once I get it, I can usually do whatever it is that I'm trying to do very well. I've always been like that my entire life. And I think that was kind of frustrating to Chris, that I just, for a long time, I just didn't get it. It wouldn't click. He would tell me things like, relax. I mean, bro, that was the biggest. I can remember him yelling at me from across the track, you relax, relax. You're so damn tense. Relax. And I'm like, I am relaxed, but you know, I wasn't. You know, looking back now, like, I know that I was not relaxed at all. And the horses were just getting all balled up into this little ball of energy, and I would get thrown, you know, or run off with. And, you know, it just got to where, you know, of course, for me, it was a struggle. But what really got it to click was when Chris sent me to California. That was when it clicked. I worked for John Sadler out there at Santa Anita and Hollywood Park, just galloping horses, breezing horses, you know. And he worked me to a point of exhaustion that I've never experienced before. And I just said, you know, I give up. I'm not fighting these horses anymore. If they're going to run off, they're going to run off. And that was the day that I figured out how to get a horse to relax. It was that day. I was so tired driving to Santa Anita at 3 o'clock in the morning. I gave up. You know, I'm not going to fight him. I just wasn't going to do it that day. And I just put my hands down. I never picked up the reins, and the horse just galloped nice and easy. And I'm not saying it was easy from there on out, but it became a whole lot easier and a whole lot more clear what Chris was trying to drill into my head, you know, for the previous year.
No, it is. We obviously can't out-muscle these 1,200-pound animals, and it is amazing how they pick up on every little thing that we might be feeling, how they're so intuitive to what we're doing, and it's really a tricky process to get that down. But, Ben, do you remember the first moment on the back of a horse? Maybe it was the first time you breezed a horse or the first time you broke from the starting gate. Whatever moment it was, do you remember the first time you thought, aha, I picked the right thing to do. This is what I want.
Oh, wow, gosh. There is so many moments. I mean, you know as well as I do that, you know, there's one of those moments all just about every day, but there's not really anything that stands out other than it takes two to pull.
Sure.
That was really, you know, the aha moment. Like, if I fight him, he's going to fight back. He's bigger than me. He's stronger than me. He has me outweighed by 1,000 pounds. Like, it's a losing battle every time. And, you know, that was probably the biggest aha moment that I've found. He's just, try to get them to relax, and if they try to get you to pick the pit up, I mean, it's you got to fight every instinct in your body to not pull back when they try to get you to pull, because you know if you do, that's it. I mean, they're gone. You're out of control. You're getting run off.
And Ben, I found in school that reaction you talk about is due to the unwillingness to be out of control. Nobody really likes to be out of control, but that was what separated those young students from those who were going to make it and those who didn't make it, because you have to be willing to be out of control at times. You're not always going to be able to out muscle this animal?
Oh, it's extremely difficult to ever, you know, on the back, you know, during a race or even in the morning. It's extremely difficult to be in 100% in control, because majority of the time you're not. I mean, it's the best way to describe it is controlled chaos.
That sounds perfect.
There was a guy that told me that one time, and that made a lot of sense to me. You know, when you're up on the back of a horse, whether it be in a race or working a horse in the morning, you're just trying to control some chaos. Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of times I couldn't have got a horse to stop no matter how bad I tried. But, you know, I was able to control, you know, the out-of-controlness, if you will, to work in to my favor.
Sure, that's well said, Ben. And what else? So besides all that, trying to figure out these animals and their quirkiness at times, what else was involved with the school besides riding? What else did you learn?
Oh gosh, I mean, I learned everything I know about horses in the racing world. I learned at the school. I mean, I learned just simple things that I never knew before, just how to pick their feet up, how to pick their feet out, how to groom, brush their tails, how to read the signs, you know, how to see what a horse is going to do before he even does it, you know, based on his or her body language. Just, you know, horse sense that I never had growing up.
That's the...
simple things, just mucking a stall, you know. Never knew how to do any of that.
Right, and that's...
How their, you know, all their, how their respiratory system works, how their digestive system works, breathing, everything. I learned a lot in the short time that we were at school.
No, Ben, and that's the beauty of the school, is that you and I were in a similar position in that we didn't grow up around the racetrack, and so it did teach us from the ground up, and that was an excellent way to learn, just like, as you said, good horsemanship, and that was the great thing about the school. But Ben, you and I both graduated in 2009, and during my time at the school, I had a roommate who also attended the school. Her name was Claire. Mm-hmm. And Claire had a boyfriend at the time whose name was Ben, and you guys met in the school, and you are now married with a son, Liam.
Mm-hmm, and little two-year-old. He just turned two in April.
Wow, they grow up so fast. Ben, the school changed your life in a big way. Tell us about your wife, Claire.
In a huge way. I mean, she's my rock. She's my go-to. You know, I can go to her with anything, you know. And it was a real struggle for a long time once we got married and I started my riding career being gone, and she was extremely understanding, even though she didn't like it. I mean, majority of the time she didn't like it, but she also understood, you know, why I had to do everything that I did. And you know, she's just, she's just my rock. She's solid.
That's awesome, Ben. I have to tell a story about your wedding. Those of you listening might think less of me for this, but I will go ahead with it anyway. I was a young apprentice riding at Tampa, and I was making preparations to be a bridesmaid.
You had just started your bug. Yeah.
I had just started my bug, and in sunny Florida, is a horrible place to be. I was making preparations to be a bridesmaid in your wedding, and I had the dress and everything. The problem arose when the nicest horse I had been riding at the time came out on the overnight for that same day. And as you know, when you're a struggling apprentice, those mounts don't come around very often. And so, if I remember correctly, I won the race that day, but I was not in the wedding. And I am very grateful to you and Claire that you found it within yourselves to forgive me when I canceled on you guys.
Yeah.
So that's now a funny story I always think about.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, like, those are extremely difficult decisions to make, but, you know, in the end, you know, like, when you're trying to get going and you're just starting to get going, if you wouldn't have shown up, that would have been a huge step backwards for your career.
Right, and it takes one to know one, basically, because you're very understanding given all that is required and how demanding it is, especially in those early stages trying to establish yourself and prove to everyone that you are an up-and-coming rider. And so Ben, I'm gonna rewind a little bit. You mentioned earlier about John Sadler, the great trainer many of you will be familiar with. Tell us about your trip to California and your experiences there.
Oh, the trip out there was great. That was I drove. Me and my dad took a road trip to California. It took us 3 days to get there. And prior to that, my dad has he's never been west of the Mississippi. That's as far as he's ever been. He's never been out there before. So to be able to experience that, you know, with my dad was a blessing in itself. You know, that was just a great father-son trip, you know, me and him going out there. And he flew back, of course. We went out there in January. We actually spent New Year's Eve in Oklahoma in a hotel room. And, Los Angeles was just such a big city. I'd never been to a city that big before. But, on any racetrack, it's kind of like its own little world. You know, at any racetrack you go to, and everybody was, you know, so willing to help me in every aspect, just not only on horses, but off horses, you know, even the jockeys out there, the other trainers, exercise riders. It was, I found it felt like home, you know, like a racetrack, just a racetrack. It just felt like home. And, that kind of just actually being on the backside of a racetrack that, you know, during the meet and how it works, you know, just bringing horses to the paddock, from the paddock, getting them ready for the race. I really feel like that ended up being a huge advantage in my favor because I know what it takes, you know, to get a horse just to the starting gate and how much work goes into it. And, as a jockey, like years later, you know, once I became a jockey and started riding, I didn't want to be the one to ruin all that work in under a minute. You know, months of prep work, you know, can be ruined in under a minute if you get a bad trip or jockey doesn't do or just flat out doesn't do, you know, what he's supposed to do, doesn't teach the horse anything, doesn't, you know, just wraps up on him or anything like that. I didn't want to be that guy. I wanted to make sure that I rode 100% the best of my ability, got as much run out of a horse as I possibly could, every horse I got on.
That is said so well, Ben. You put it perfectly because so much preparation, when you look at the life of a racehorse, so much prep goes on, you know, in the early years and before breeding and everything like that. So it's, that is so well said as far as the responsibility a jockey must take to fulfill their commitment to the best they are able to do. So Ben, as you said, you started riding and you thought about that during your career. You won your first race in June of 2009, if I'm correct. So do you remember?
I believe it was on June 13th at Indiana Downs. It was an allowance race. It was going a mile. It was for Jones Scott. Horse's name was Iron ID. And it was a sloppy track that day. I remember it well. And my dad was even there for my first win.
Wow, that's fantastic. Do you remember, did the jockeys initiate you after the race?
Oh, absolutely they did.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. I got the shaving cream and the baby powder and, ice buckets thrown on me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And And so you rode the Kentucky Circuit, Indiana, Hoosier Park. You rode at Hoosier Park during your very early years as a rider. And
yes, during my first year as a rider.
And if I remember correctly, Hoosier Park had this Great Eight program at the time. And tell us what that was. Tell us what that was about.
That was a promotion that the racetrack put on. It was kind of neat. Anytime one of the Great Eight would win, they would, whoever the winning jockey was in the Great Eight, would throw T-shirts out to the crowd, and they even let us pick a song. Our theme song, when we're in the winner's circle, they play a song over the loudspeaker. Mine was AC/DC.
That's awesome. That's
a long
awesome.
It's a long way to the top.
Hey, that's a perfect song for a jockey early on in his career. And you definitely did. You made it to the top. And who were some of the riders in the jocks room when you started out early on that mentored you, that took you under their wing?
Oh, I mean, a lot of people did. They were, mainly it was any kind of safety thing, that, like, of course, nobody wants to see anybody get hurt, but as a young rider, I didn't know, like, for a long time, a good spot from a bad spot, when to go and when don't to go, when you have enough horse, when you don't have enough horse, and if you have a lot enough horse, if you try, something bad's gonna happen. And I had a couple things, several close calls, and a couple mistakes, but you gotta learn from your mistakes and keep going.
Absolutely, Ben, and that's why a new rider will have what they call the bug, the apprentice, which is the weight advantage, which is something the trainers can look at and think they get an advantage due to the lack of experience. But
right.
But Ben, we're actually going to head to commercial break, and we will continue our visit with jockey Ben Creed after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, this is CJ Johnson with your JockeyTalk360.com weekly update. First, let's start off with our Jockey's Guild Jockey of the Week, Joe Bravo, who won 43% of his mounts and came in the money on 64% of his mounts. He led North America in earnings because of his win on Mr. Z in the Ohio Derby. Next, let's head up to Delaware Park, where Alex Cintron continues to lead the standings. He won 35% of his mounts and came in the money an astounding 75% of the time. Now let's head to Churchill Downs, where Julian Leperoux and Corey Lannery are fighting for the top spot on the leader standings. Julian won 40% of his mounts and came in the money 60% of the time. Next, let's head to the Midwest, where Rosemary Holmeister won 40% of her mounts and came in the money 80% of the time. She also won the Northbound Pride Oaks at Canterbury. In Texas, CJ McMahon continues to dominate the Lone Star State. He is the leading rider at Lone Star Park, and out of 26 mounts, he won 11 of them and came in the money 77% of the time. Again, for the second week in a row, he led North America in wins. On the West Coast at Santa Anita, Victor Espinoza continued his hot streak by winning 5 of his 9 mounts and winning the Grade 2 Summertime Oaks. He also came in the money 77% of the time. Finally, if you enjoy daily fantasy sports, check out jockeydraft.com, where you can draft a lineup of your favorite jockeys and win cash prizes. Just like Jock Talk, a portion of the proceeds benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For all the latest news on jockeys, visit JockeyTalk360.com or follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk. This has been CJ Johnson with your JockeyTalk360.com weekly update.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lascano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
So around that final turn, the outside Alcacer perhaps trying to get that head in front from Bernie the Maestro to the inside. Amen Kit and Target sighted drifting out wide as Royal Bench, and they're into the stretch with a quarter of a mile left to go. And it's Alcacer and Ben Creed who's picked up the mount. Target sighted running a big one in between horses, now surging down to the inside as Target sighted. Amen Kit now to the center of the course. It's Alcacer, a 16th of a mile left to go. Alcacer's holding them off. Alcacer gonna win. Gonna win by a length from Target sighted second. Amen Kitten and Olympic Thunder from far back.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McManigal joined tonight by jockey Ben Creed. Ben, how about that race replay of the Kitten's Joy Stakes at Colonial Downs in 2013?
I remember it well. I remember it well.
You actually picked up that mount.
I did. Yes, I did. I went to ride a horse for Eric Reed. The name of that horse I went for escapes me at the moment. Oh, gosh, I'm kind of embarrassed. I can't remember. I hope Eric's not listening to this. But I won on Eric's horse. I've been getting on that horse in the morning. She was a maiden. And she won on the turf at Indiana Downs quite impressively. In fact, I never turned my stick up. All I did at the quarter pole was just smooch to her. And she just, I mean, she picked up another gear and just flew down the lane. She won easy. So I thought she's worth going, you know, to ride her in a state. She's a nice one. But unfortunately, I believe it rained that day, the day of the state. About 30 minutes before the races even began, and it was on the turf. They left the races on the turf that day because I think it was their last day or last weekend of racing, so they just left it on. I remember coming around the final turn. I was sitting in a really good position, and she stepped in a low spot. She stepped in a hole coming around the turn, and she head bobbled. And her head came straight up, and I think it scared her enough to where she just threw in the towel. She didn't give me anything after that. But luckily, I mean, I guess, you know, for me, luckily, there were some big stakes races. I think it was at Monmouth. A lot of jockeys were riding at Monmouth, and then we're going to fly over to Colonial that day to ride those stakes. Some of them couldn't make it for their earlier races. So I saw Kenny, and I knew Kenny. My agent knew Kenny. So I called my agent, and I said, Jamie. I said, get on the phone, call Kenny. He's going to need a rider, and I can't remember what race it was. I said, he's going to need a rider in this race because the flight was delayed at the airport leaving. They couldn't land because of the rainstorm that we had. So anyway, that's separate. I ended up, he was able to get a hold of him. I picked up the mount. So I'm reading the program, and this was like, all this was just sheer luck. I talked to Kenny, never been on the horse. All I knew was, you know, his past performances. And he looked good in that race. It was not an easy race, though. That was a tough one. I remember when the gates opened thinking that I am sitting way too close to the front. I was not supposed to be there. I was supposed to be about five lengths farther back than what I already was. And I was real close to the pace, but, I didn't want to be there, but I didn't have any choice. I had to be there. So we're going around the track, and we get to the quarter pole, or we get to the 3/8 pole, rather, and I just remember thinking, wow, I have a ton of horse under me. I had a lot more horse. It was hot that day, too. He was washed out. He was sweaty. I chirped to him at the quarter pole, and he responded. I turned my stick up, hit him a few times, and he exploded down the lane. I got so much run out of that horse that day. That was a good day. It was a rough weekend, though, I'll tell you. Because as soon as that race was over, I left Lexington, Kentucky that morning at 7:30. I got in a car and drove to Colonial. I think it was about a 10-hour drive. Rode both my races. Rode Eric's horse, and I picked up the one for Kenny. Rode those two. Got right back in the car and drove all the way back to Lexington all night. Stopped periodically along the way. Just took maybe a 30-minute nap. Drove all the way to Ellis Park, all the way in Western Kentucky. I got there and rode two more races for Eric, actually. And I won one of them and ran third in the next one. So that was quite the weekend.
Talk about the busy life of a jockey running all over the country.
Yeah, needless to say, I was exhausted.
That is quite understandable, Ben. Quite understandable.
Yeah. You've been there. You know how that goes.
It is very demanding, especially when you're also waking up most mornings early, 5:36, mm-hmm. to go work horses, and then traveling on top of that, riding. It's obviously very demanding. But Ben, really quickly to mention something I just remembered about that Kitten's Joy Stakes at Colonial. I was in that race, actually.
Were in that race. You were right in front of me for majority of the race.
Yes. You were watching the replay.
I was following you around there.
And I had no chance against your horse. I think that was the only time we actually rode together. And
I think it was in the same race anyway. Because I remember riding at Churchill the first races you rode. I was there. We didn't ride the same race, but we rode the same day.
I remember that. But that Kitten's Joy Stakes, that was the only time we rode together. And mm-hmm. I have to admit, you beat me. But.
Did you pick up one in there? Didn't you pick up that horse?
I did. I picked up Bernie the Maestro for Mike Maker in that race.
For Mike Maker, yeah.
It was the mile and a half. I remember that race.
Mm-hmm.
And
long race.
And your horse took to that distance very nicely. Most definitely. And obviously like the jockey as well. But Ben, so that was just 2013. You started riding in 2009, so I'm going to mm-hmm. back up a little bit and let's go over. You accomplished two riding titles at Turfway Park, the mm-hmm. first of which, as I mentioned in the intro, was during your bug year, which is quite the accomplishment given that you're such an inexperienced rider, but you're doing very, very well. And tell us the satisfaction that has to come with that.
Well, me and my agent, we met up, just to back up a little bit more. I met with my agent in September. That was when Turfway was running in September. I just hired him. And one of the first things he told me, he said, we're just going to coast through this meet, October and November. We're just going to coast through, and we're going to set a solid foundation for Turfway Park this winter, coming up. So I said, okay, yeah, that sounds good. He said, now I need you to be here every day. We'll meet in the kitchen at 7 o'clock. We'll meet there every day, 7 o'clock. Okay. So we did. For the next, for September, October, November, we met in the kitchen at Turfway Park at 7 o'clock, and we worked that backside. I mean, we beat it to death. We did travel down to Lexington and hit Keeneland a little bit, and we hit, of course, the training center, and we went over to Churchill, but not very much. We focused really hard on the backside at Turfway. And in that time, one of Jamie's good friends, and got to be one of my very good friends, was David Pate. I got to know the Pates over the years very well. Good people, very nice people. He's the one that really got me going at the beginning part of the meet. I think the first week I won four or five races for him within the first week. And, at the beginning of the meet, if you can start out hot, you know, you can, you know, capitalize on that and run with it, which is what we did. I picked up more people, better horses, and it just worked. I knew at the beginning of the meet that I was set up to have a good meet because I really liked a lot of the horses that I was getting on. But I had no idea, not a clue, that I would be leading right. I mean, there was 2 weeks left, and I thought, oh, surely somebody's going to catch me. Somebody's going to catch me. But, you know, I think I ended the meet 7 wins in front of the guy that was behind me, which was, you know, again, I was just, you know, so thankful and so overwhelmed. Like, I never dreamed that early in my career that I would ever do anything like that.
Ben, I remember reading, I believe it was that year that you won 4 races on the final day of the meet to just solidify that great accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
But you had the opportunity to ride for some very good trainers, and you mentioned Eric Reed earlier. You mm-hmm. two teamed together to win the Wintergreen Stakes with a filly by the name of Rinterval, if I pronounced mm-hmm. that correctly. That was that filly's first stakes victory. And tell us the story about that filly.
Eric had called me. He was running quite a few horses. He called my agent. And again, me and Eric, we got to be pretty good friends after that. I started riding some for him. So, I mean, he just, you know, I'd never met the guy. I didn't really know who he was. All I knew was he was entering a bunch of horses and putting me on everything, and they were all running really well. So, he called, I gave him my number because he wanted to know, after he said, call me at, you know, after, you ride my horses, and if there's anything I need to know, let me know. So I said, okay, you know, if that's what you want, that's what I'll do. So I called him, and you know, at the end of the day, if he, you know, had a couple in, or if I had a break or whatever, I'd give him a call and just tell him what I thought. And he said, listen, he said, next weekend, he said, I got this filly I'm gonna put in the Wintergreen Stakes. He said, I really like her. She's trained well. She's coming off a little bit of a layoff. He said, I think you're gonna like her. Told me a little bit about her. She's doing everything right and this, that, and the other. And on race day, I mean, she broke like a rocket. I mean, she broke so hard that she almost broke my hold off of her mane. We ended up being like 3 lengths in front right out of the gate. And I wasn't supposed to be in the front because at that time, the way the track was playing, it was favoring closers. So I didn't want to be, you know, I wanted to sit like second or third. That's where we wanted to be. But, I mean, I had such a strong hold on her, and she is just running straight through the bit that I couldn't slow her down any more than I did. And so I thought, well, if she's going to relax here, I got to let her relax. I don't want to fight her. That's going to make things worse. So I just kind of let her settle, and she settled into a real nice groove for me, and we got halfway around the second turn, because again, the track was favoring closers, so I didn't want to ask her to start running, you know, too soon. I never moved on her until I straightened for home past the quarter pole, and all I did was give her a head and go, and she grabbed another gear unlike anything I've ever felt at that point. And I knew right away. I was like, oh, she's got this. Nobody's going to catch her. I've got too much horse. And she did. She won by several lengths. After that, unfortunately, I never got to ride her after that. But she did go on and accomplish quite a bit. She ended up going to Del Mar, and she ran in a $400,000 stake, and she got beat, I believe it was a head or a neck. She got beat by none other than Zenyatta.
Wow.
And then I think she ran in the Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs on the dirt, which she didn't really like the dirt. I think she ran fifth in the Breeders' Cup. But, I mean, she had a lot of heart. She was a lot of fun. We worked well together, to say the least. I really, really liked that horse.
It's always nice to ride those kind of horses that give you everything they have. We're here with jockey Ben Creed on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ben, you also had quite the successful career riding quarter horses at Indiana.
Mm-hmm. I did, yeah.
So other than the obvious in that quarter horses, of course, run much faster for a shorter distance, tell us the mm-hmm. difference between riding a thoroughbred race and riding a quarter horse race.
For any gearheads out there listening that know anything about motors, the best way I can describe a quarter horse versus a thoroughbred is like a four-stroke and a two-stroke. A quarter horse will do everything twice as hard and twice as fast. You really have to be on your toes when you're on quarter horses. I mean, they're so ready to go. I mean, ready to do anything. And the scary part is you don't know what they're going to do. I mean, I'm just going to be honest, since I'm retired. quarter horses made me extremely nervous. Majority of the time when I'd swing a leg over a quarter horse, I was very, very nervous. But, I mean, you know, Christina, you rode. I mean, there's some horses you just want to get off of. And there's some of them you get the feeling like this thing's going to do something.
That is
majority, I would say a good 75% of the quarter horses I get that feeling on, and I didn't like it. But my God, they were so fast leaving the gate, and they were so fast running down the lane. They just run so hard. It's incredible.
Well, Ben, nervous or not, you did very well with them. I believe you were riding a go ahead, Ben.
Again, my success as a quarter horse jockey was, I mean, to put it bluntly, sheer dumb luck. And, I mean, it really was. A good friend of mine that I knew for, you knew him too, Matt Frazier. He had some real nice, real, you know, kind of quiet quarter horses that, you know, he didn't want them super, you know, jacked up and coming out of their skin, you know, on race day. He wanted them laid back and focused and chilled out, and which was, if I was going to ride quarter horses, that's what I wanted. I was very, very selective and very, very picky, not only the horses that I rode, but who I rode for. And, it was kind of unfortunate, but Shanley Jackson was riding everything for Matt. And I told Matt, I said, he was running a bunch of horses in 2013 at Indiana. Sometimes he would have two horses in the same race. And I told Matt, I said, if you ever need a rider I know Shanley's riding everything. If you ever need an extra rider, keep me in mind. I'd love to ride some of them for you. You know, they're fun. Like, it was just fun for me. That's all I wanted quarter horses to be, was just fun. You know, because I rode thoroughbred. You know, I didn't need to go and hustle quarter horses. So I was just going to ride strictly for Matt Frazier. Well, early in the meet, Shanley was unfortunate. I wish it didn't happen this way, but it unfortunately it did. He went down in a race, and he ended up breaking, I think it was his pelvis. I think he broke his pelvis. Messed him up for a while. It set him out for the rest of the meet. And, you know, Matt just said, Ben, you're next in line, buddy. He said, will you ride all my horses? I said, name me on. But when Shanley's back up, put him back first. He was there, not me. So he did. Matt started riding me on everything. And one of the first races I rode for him was in a stake, and it wound up winning. And then he just kept putting them in, and I just kept keeping them straight, and they just kept winning. And next thing I knew, more and more people wanted me to start riding for them.
How many races did you win on quarter horses, Ben?
That's a good question. I never actually looked up strictly the quarter horses. I really don't know.
I was just curious how many, but
I know Equibase, I know doesn't count the quarter horse wins. So technically, I've actually been in the winner's circle over 600 times.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, because thoroughbreds, it was 549.
Right.
Not counting quarter horses, and I know I've won more than 50 races, or 51 races on quarter horses.
Sure.
So I've actually been in the winner's circle and had my picture taken over 600. So.
You'll have to stop one day and try to figure out that number, Ben.
Yeah, I know. I'd really like to know.
Well, speaking of numbers, just 5 years after you won your first race on June 16th, 2014, I believe, you celebrated your 500 win milestone aboard Success Is Racing.
Yes,
was the name of the horse. Kind of a funny name given the memorable event. Tell us about that day.
Oh, that day was. I was counting down. My birthday is actually on June 8th, and I was 3 wins away on June 8th of 2013. I wanted so bad to get 500 wins on my birthday. And I ended up actually winning 2 races on June 8th last year. 2 races between Belterra Park and Indiana Downs. I won 2 races. So. But it was, several days later, I finally, but he was a good one to win it on because he turned out to be a real nice horse. I won multiple stakes races on him last year.
That's fantastic. And sometimes that one away, that had to be so close, so frustrating for those few days.
On that day, I actually got beat in a photo finish at Belterra Park. I was riding for Aaron West.
Wow.
I got beat in a photo finish. I almost got it on my birthday.
So close, so close.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, you mentioned earlier about the rider of the quarter horses who broke his pelvis. Well, you also actually broke your pelvis. Tell us that story.
I did, yeah. That sucked. Yeah, that was at Ellis Park, and that's also kind of a semi-funny story, I guess. Ellis Park was running. I believe it was the last weekend of Ellis Park. And from the time I woke up, it was all looking back on it anyway. It was almost like I never should have gone. All the signs were there. Don't go. I was supposed to work horses at Keeneland in Lexington that morning. Well, I woke up late. I got to the track late. I was named on 3 horses over there. 2 of them, one was for Eric Reed, had a good shot. One of them was 30-1. The other one, I believe, was 10-1. So, of course I'm going. Eric's, he was big client, I'm going. So I went to Keeneland, got on the horses, and I worked them, and I asked Eric, I said, oh, hey, what about the horse we have in over at Ellis? He goes, oh, I got to scratch her. I meant to tell you, I got to scratch her today. She, I can't remember, I think they had her shod, and she caught a hot nail, and she came up lame. Not a big deal, but bad enough to where she couldn't run. So I said, okay. So I still had the 2. One of them looked okay, and the other one was a long shot, but, that didn't matter. I was still going. I get in the car to leave, and I look at the scratches, the early scratches, another one scratched. Now, I got to drive from Lexington all the way to Ellis, and the horse was 30-1, and I thought, I don't really want to go all the way to Ellis Park to ride one 30-1 shot. So I'm like, I don't think I'm going to go. So, again, now that I'm retired, I can say that. I wasn't going to go that day. So my agent called me. He said, Ben, we picked up one in the last race for David Vance. Horse has got a good shot, 7-2. So I thought, oh, awesome. You know, David Vance, good trainer. You know, I've been wanting to ride for this guy. I've been over talking to him in his barn. You know, he's a pickup mount. Great. Horse 7-2, maiden special weight. Sounds good. All right, yeah, we're going. Okay. So I drive over there. I get there, and I think the 30-1 was in, like, the third race. I get there, and the horse ends up scratching. Meanwhile, the horse I picked up is in the last race. So I'm already there, and I'm like, well, I've got a long day. I got to wait for, you know, very last race to go out and to ride. Finally, the last race rolled around. So it was a first-time start. It was a 2-year-old. And a lot of times, you know, 2-year-olds, I like to go out a little bit early just to see how the horse is acting, being saddled, you know, first time starter, everything's new. I want to see how this horse is acting. Horse just walked out there, head down, you know, just kind of looking, stood there, you know, leg propped up. They're putting the saddle on, doing everything right. So, you know, I thought, she'll be fine. If she's handling this like that, she'll be fine. I'll be all right. So I go over, I talk to the trainer, and I'm reach for the reins. I'm getting ready to get a leg up. I reach for the reins, and something spooked the horse. I don't know if it was me, but the horse jumped forward and kicked out to the side and nailed me right on my side where your pelvis comes to a point. Nailed me, picked me as hard as she could right there. And down I went. I mean, threw me back about 10, 15 yards in excruciating pain. I knew right away that something was broken. I just didn't know what. But ended up being my pelvis, and I was out for exactly 30 days. I missed all of the September meet and rode the opening day at Keeneland.
Well, Ben, 30 days is still quite a quick comeback to make after a broken pelvis. Ben, we are almost out of time. I can't believe how quickly this flew past. We didn't even get to mention you are now retired. So nobody.
I am retired. Yes.
Nobody can look for you in the entries anymore. But what are your future aspirations? What are you looking to do now, Ben?
Well, I'm right now. I'm driving a forklift at Lowe's, and I've actually talked to the store manager because a lot of things that jockeys do a lot of charity work, you know, and donations and everything. And one thing that we did in Cincinnati and Indianapolis was we went to children's hospitals and talked to the children and, you know, gave away goggles and talked to them about horses and everything. And they loved it. But anyway, actually, I talked to the store manager, and Lowe's is willing to sponsor me to go around to some of these children's hospitals, and all I told them, you know, I can have a set of silks made. Of course, I'll go in my jockey, my white pants and boots, and I said I can get a set of silks made with Lowe's logo on it, you know, as I'm doing this, and they thought it was a great idea, and I thought maybe, you know, few other companies around might be willing to do it, because in Georgia there's no racetracks here. You know, that's something that nobody gets to see here. So I thought, you know, that might not be a bad idea.
Ben,
trying to get the ball rolling on that to go around to some of these children's hospitals and, you know, just.
That's fantastic, Ben. We are all out of time. That is such a great thing you're getting ready to do. You are one of the hardest working people I have known, and you've accomplished so much already. We wish you all the best in your future endeavors, Ben. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you again for having me. I really appreciate it. It's brought back a lot of memories.
Absolutely.
A lot of good, fond memories.
Good memories, Ben. If you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out the podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I am Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.